when we came home, when Sid, the accident happened August the 14th, and Sid came home from the hospital. He was there for, I keep thinking November, but surely he wasn't there that long. He came home from the hospital in September, and he was in a body cast until November. And Nanny came and helped take care of the children during that time. And Sid's body cast was such that she made a diaper for him, and he had to use a walker. And I think she fixed a little something on his walker that he could carry things around with him.
So he wasn't confined to the bed with his body cast?
No, the doctor said that he could do as much as he wanted to do. Okay. So he would go out the front door. His room was in the basement. We had a walkout basement. So he would go out the front door and walk through the yard, because there were about three or four steps down to the driveway. So he would walk through the yard to the sidewalk and then go down the driveway and come into his room through the back door, never having to take any steps. Now, if he wanted to go up and down the steps, he could do that, but it was a big deal. He had to get on his butt and scoot. And he did do that sometimes, but most of the time that was what he did. And probably that was in the last month before he got out of the body cast. But I remember the students in my job taking you all to Jacobson Park. And I remember Sydney being on the swings and the, you know, on all the equipment with that body cast, and it just made me so apprehensive. But the doctor told me if he felt like doing it, it was fine. He didn't want a psych case, he wanted an orthopedic case. So
was it good for him?
Yeah, I guess. We went to Jacobson Park, and he did all the things on the playground.
I always thought he was confined for a long period of time to the bed, and that's why we got him the fish tank.
No. He had the fish tank. Well, it was to him a long time. It was from September to November, and we had to have a home school teacher come and teach him during that time. He was a fourth grader, and he was behind when he went back to school, even though the teacher came, and Nanny tried to help him with his homework and to do his schoolwork. I think he was a little behind when he went back to class.
Do you remember this long switch that Nanny gave Sid to scratch in his cast?
Yeah, and well, he had coat hangers too he would use. And then I think when they cut it off, they found the coat hanger.
Oh, really?
They said it was just lucky it hadn't been there very long.
Well, can you talk about who your husband David, Aaron David Motley, who he was, and kind of his character, and just how you met him, and what was it about him that you fell in love with him about?
Well, I met him through my friend Leonel. She had a first cousin, had three first cousins who all lived in Harrodsburg. And she was in Harrodsburg visiting her cousin, and she was fixed up on a date with this guy named David Wampler. So she was all aglow about it and talked about it quite a bit at school. And then she said that he had a friend, and she thought maybe I would go out with him and we could do a double date. So we did.
How old were you? 14?
We were sophomores.
You were 14?
I was 15, I think. So he came over, and we double dated, and we probably double dated two or three times, and then he just started coming over, and we went on our own and dated. And he had a big Chrysler convertible. And
how could he afford that?
He, I don't know.
Was it an old junky one?
No, it was not that old. It was a few years old. It was a used car. But it was a nice car. And the fact it was a convertible made it very snappy. And we thought that was tough. And so when we would double date a lot with Leonel and David, we'd put the top back. She always wanted the top back. And then a few times we had to put it up real quick, and that was, it was a lot of work. It was not an easy.
David's car.
No,
David
Motley's car.
Okay.
And he had had a motorcycle before that, and he'd had several wrecks on the motorcycle. And he was a quiet boy. He had naturally curly hair, and wasn't, you know, he was, had grown up on the farm, and he was a football player, and those sorts of things were his main interests. He was helping his father finish up their house. Their family had built a home, and they were putting the fieldstone on the house, and he and his older brother Gene, who was in college, he was going to Moorhead. They were working on the house, finishing up the stone on the house, and then he had another brother, Jimmy. And those three boys did the work on it. Now, David probably had made some money in the summer doing construction work, because both of his uncles here in Lexington worked for a construction company. So I think he may have made a little money doing that. But,
And how much older?
He was, I remember finding out that he was 19. I saw his driver's license. And I don't know at what phase of the relationship I found out that he was 19, but that seemed a bit older than me. But in actuality, I was a sophomore, and I think he was a junior, so he wasn't that far ahead of me in school, but he was age-wise, and I never knew why. He was born the first part of March, and I was born the end of March, but my parents started me to school when I was 5, and so I suspected his parents didn't start him to school till he was older. But I learned early on, you know, his dad loved to go to Canada to fish and hunt, and David had been himself. And he loved it up there. That was one of his great loves, was to go to Canada. What attracted me to him? I guess I just hadn't dated a lot of boys, and it was comfortable dating him. He had a similar background to me, having lived on a farm. There were 6 in his family versus 3 in mine, so that was quite a bit different, having that many brothers and sisters. But we dated in the year, and I decided in my junior year that I would go to center so I could be near to him. He was living in Harrodsburg or out in the country. But then he, in the meantime, joined the Marines after he'd been out of high school for a while. He and his buddies all joined the Marines together. And we never did understand how he could sign his brother up to be a Marine.
But he did.
He did. By that time, his brother had graduated from college. And then his friend David Wampler went to the Marines. And then his other friend J.D. Walters went to the Marines. They all went at the same time, along with David and his brother Gene. And so there I was at center, not very far from his home, and he was off in the Marines, so that turned out to be kind of a little ironical. But
did you stay together this whole time?
Yeah, we were. We stayed dated. Yeah.
Did you date other people?
Yeah, I went to UK after 1 year at center. I went to UK, and I dated a guy from Cleveland. Interestingly enough, Cleveland area. He was actually from Hudson, Ohio, and we dated. He was in the service, and my roommate had introduced him to me, and through her cousins. And so we dated a while, and I actually thought about giving up David and staying with Gary. He was in the Army, and he was serving at Fort Knox, so he would drive over and visit in Versailles and in Lexington. He was very nice, and I went up and visited his family, and we just kind of...
He had graduated from UK? Gary had?
No.
No? Just he had service?
He had gone to college somewhere up there, but he hadn't finished. He had maybe just gone a year or two, and then he went in the Army.
Okay.
And he would come often, and then after I went up there and visited, we didn't have too many more visits together, and that kind of fizzled out. Mm-hmm. And your father was very disgusted with me and angry with me for even thinking about a relationship with somebody else. So he told me I had to make a choice.
How about your choice also? You were thinking about going into the Peace Corps. Like, you were thinking about med school. And I thought,
not med school at that stage.
You said that you were thinking about the Peace Corps, and he said that you had to make up your mind now. Do you remember?
No, he said I had to make up my mind then between the two of them. So I decided to go with David. So I finished college. We agreed that we would not marry until I finished college. And so I finished college in 61, in June of 61, the first part of June. And then sometime that fall, he asked me to marry him, and we set the wedding date for June of 62. And
did he have, like, the presence when you were dating, kind of like a farm boy from Kentucky? Like, what kind of, if you met him, how would you describe him?
He was quiet, but he was very personable. And he went into insurance sales, and that was always kind of an enigma because he was a quiet person. But what I observed is that he could relate really well to people where they were. And anytime he had a conversation with somebody, he could be very engaging. And people liked him. And I think he did pretty well selling insurance because of that.
What characteristics do you see from your husband and your kids?
Gosh. Turn that off. I'll have to think.
Well, we can go on to something else. We can come back to it. So can you talk a little bit about...
Well, I see that in Sid. Sid is not, he does not have a college education. And yet I think he relates very well to people when he talks to them. I think he has the ability to do small talk, and yet he's can be friendly, open, but a little guarded, and I see a lot of that from his dad. I think the Motleys are very faithful, and I think they're are very open people, and I see that in my children, more so maybe in you and Lynn than in Sid. I don't think Sid's quite as open as you two are, but and also in Sid, I see his ability to do things mechanically, and
Dad was a lot, your husband was a lot like that.
He could do do a lot of things. Yeah, he was fairly talented, and then anything he didn't know how to do, his uncles knew how to do, and they could teach him. And I think he was very faithful to doing what was right. I remember once there was a situation where someone we knew was cheating on his wife, and your dad took it upon himself to go talk to this man and try to persuade him to let it go and get back with his family, and he did. And I thought, you know, I think that showed his sense of values and family values, and I think you all are a lot like that.
So can you talk about just kind of the sequence of events, about where you were and what happened and kind of what led up to the plane crash, like, you know, that day before, and like what was going on?
Oh, the day before was Friday.
What was the date?
That would have been August the 13th.
1971.
And I had come home from work. I was just totally frazzled. I was dealing with a bunch of new students. They'd just come in July, and they were probably not being too responsible at that time, and just having to go back over a lot of basics with them and try to begin the molding process again. And I'd had one class already, and this was my second class, and they were a diverse group, and trying to get them on board, and I was worn out. And I came home, and your dad and Sid and Colonel Cloyd and Larry Rice, I believe, were building, fixing a basketball goal for Sidney in the backyard. Paul, your grandfather, had built it, had welded it, and they were going to put it in concrete and put it in the backyard. Well, that then went into Colonel Cloyd was always the kind that wanted to have a party, wanted us to come eat with them, always wanting to give us a drink, always wanting to entertain. So he said that they were cooking supper and told me what to bring. And so I got out of the car and went on in the house, and they were digging and trying to get this place made for the basketball goal. So we went over there, and they had some friends in, and we ate supper and sat around and talked and had a few drinks.
Were we there as well, or were we with the babysitter that night?
No, you all were there. We went home, and the next day, that evening, I believe, or earlier in the week, Don Kiger, your father's first cousin, had called and asked if he wanted to go flying, that he was going to go Saturday. And they had an agreement that any time that Donnie was going flying, and he was trying to get enough hours flying to get a commercial pilot's license, that he would call your dad, because your dad just loved to go with him. He loved to be up there flying around. So that day, that Saturday morning, Sid was to go, and this would have been Sid's first time to go up and fly. And I never knew, you know, what their itinerary was or anything. I just knew he was with him.
Right, right.
So they left. So there was some discussion that morning with us about whether or not your dad should cancel that flying escapade.
Really?
And we would go to Harrodsburg and dig potatoes, and because his dad had put out a bunch of potatoes, and that was not exceptional. Mr. Motley often would do that. He would put in a row of potatoes for one of the kids, and we'd go dig them and have them all winter. So he talked about maybe we should go to Harrodsburg and dig potatoes. Well, your dad had this sense of family. And it used to be a standing comment from me, if he didn't get to go home every 2 weeks and have some time with his dad or his brothers, he just was miserable to live with. So I would send him pack and I'd say, go be with your dad, go be with Jean and Jimmy, just get it out of your system. But that day, I didn't particularly want to go dig potatoes. It was August. We were going to go the next day to Evansville, Indiana, to Bob Nesmith's father's funeral or visitation. I don't know which we were doing, but we were going on Sunday to Evansville. And I didn't want to be gone digging potatoes Saturday and then to Evansville on Sunday. So your dad and Sid left, and they went flying with Donnie, and I had no idea what the time they left or anything memorable about that day other than they left, and you and Lynn were there with me, and I remember Mary West came over, and we were sitting at our kitchen table.
And I was at Ginger, the Nippers' house.
Were you?
Yeah, I was at the Nippers. I think Lynn was with you.
Well, I had made the beds that morning. I changed the sheets and made the beds. I remember doing that, and I was listening to Simon and Garfunkel like I would often do on your little record player and just loving that music and getting it all done. And Mary came over. It was after lunch, and we were talking about Sonny's sister, and I can see her, Betty. And Mary was fussing about Betty and about her lifestyle and her choices. And I was saying something about, well, I sure hope that if anything happened to David, that people will step up and tell me what, when I'm going astray or I'm making choices that I shouldn't be. Because I think at that time her husband had died and she was kind of footloose and making some bad decisions. And anyway, I remember having that conversation with Mary. And I think Mary was there when they called me from the Bardstown, from the Flagey Hospital in Bardstown. And it was a sister, a nun, because it's a Catholic hospital. And she told me that there had been a plane crash and that my son was severely injured and that they were bringing him to Lexington. And then I said, where are they bringing him? Because working at a hospital, I didn't want him to go just anywhere. And she said, they're gonna take him to UK. And I said, oh no, I don't want him to go there. And she said, well, they're already on the way and that's where they'll go. And I said, well, where is my husband? And she said, well, you just go be with your son. And I said, I need to be with my husband. And she said, no, you can't help your husband. You go be with your son. And she didn't tell me David was dead. And so, she may not have, I assume she knew it.
So when I talked to Memo, she said that you had called them and you didn't know, and I know this is probably like really hard to remember, but she said you didn't know whether to go to Dad or were calling them to say, what should I do?
Yeah, well, I was furious with this nun because I wanted to be with your dad. And she kept saying, you can't help your, she said, you know, no, she never said he's dead, don't worry about him. Which would have been nice if she had done. She said, you cannot help him. You do not need to come here. You know, she said it two or three different ways. So then I called, the next person I called was Mom and Daddy and told them. And then I guess I called the Motleys, called Mr. Motley.
And then you just went straight to the hospital or did Mary
Well, the Cloyds, I called, Miss Cloyd took me to the hospital. Colonel Cloyd and Miss Cloyd took me to the hospital.
And what happened to Mary? Did she watch us? Or?
No, Betty took you all.
Betty Montley?
Betty Cloyd.
Cloyd.
Betty and the Cloyd girls came, took care of you all. And the Cloyds took me to the hospital. And somewhere along there, I called Carolyn and Blevins and told her, because they came to the hospital.
Yeah, I didn't know you were really good friends with her. Uh-huh. And so then what happened?
Well, I guess I don't remember who of the Motleys I called, but I remember being at the hospital and Doris and Ed being there, and I remember Shirley and Jess being there. And then I guess Phyllis and Billy came too. And at that time, see, I didn't know another plane was involved. It wasn't until they all came that I found out there was another plane involved in the accident.
And thought it was something that...
I just thought it was something that happened to them, that plane. Right. And then I found out there was another plane involved.
So do you remember seeing Sid?
Yeah, I was right there with him in the emergency room. And that was an awful, awful situation because Sid came to the emergency room and we couldn't get anybody to take care of him. And they just, they had a big sign up there that said, we do not take care of our patients on a first-come, first-served basis. We take care of them based on the severity of the situation. Well, here was a child whose father had been killed, and he was lying there in the hallway, and I couldn't get anybody to do anything. This was at UK.
If it would have been a different hospital.
Oh, I felt like if it had been a Good Sam, he would have been under treatment in a matter of minutes. So after a few more minutes, or after about an hour, it was 6 o'clock on Saturday night. I went to the telephone. I was furious, and Miss Cloyd was having a fit. Miss Cloyd was doing everything she could. I went to the telephone, and I called Dr. Carl Scott. And at 6 o'clock on a Saturday night, he answered the phone himself. And from then on, things rolled. From then on, we were in high gear. They got Sid to a room. They got him to x-ray. They had doctors there. Dr. Segnitz was there. Dr. Scott was there in 15 minutes. And before he got there, things were rolling.
So it was more of the hospital.
Yeah,
it was like the lack of competence.
Yeah.
Than it was like, I thought for some reason I always had the impression that you, like nobody would operate on him because they were, like,
no.
It was just the
nobody,
of the
it was
hospital.
Incompetence of the staff in the ER. And there was a full investigation of it that went on for months. Because of Miss Cloyd.
How long did you wait?
Well, they called me at 3 o'clock, and it was 6 o'clock when I went in to call Dr. Scott.
So you were there for about 3 hours?
I was there at least for an hour and a half, because Sydney wasn't there when we got there. So
that
it was at least...
Like
it was, and because I was in the medical field, I knew full well the importance of getting him care right away. His face was sliced right down through there. It was terrible. And he didn't know. He kept saying, where's Dad? Where's Dad? Said, Donnie put on the brakes too fast, Mom. Donnie put on the brakes. So, finally, thank God for Dr. Scott. When Dr. Scott died, I told his wife that story. I remember in the waiting room, Mama and Daddy and the Blevins and the Motleys. And then everybody went home but me, and I stayed the night.
And Aunt Sharon was at this other funeral?
Her father-in-law's, yeah. So I spent the night there at that hospital, and then the next morning, Colonel Cloyd took me home, and that was the hardest part, was going home. But people were very, very loving and very helpful, and
Well, that's a. Let's, you know, when I was talking to your mother and we were talking about your father, I asked her, you know, what do you think was one of the proudest moments in your husband's life? And she commented that it was your college graduation.
I'm sure.
Why would that be?
Well, thinking about his family, I don't know anybody had graduated from college. So I think that must have made him very happy and very proud.
Do you remember what are some of your fondest memories with your father?
Oh, we would, when it would snow in the wintertime, he had a big sleigh, and he would hook it up to the tractor and pull us through the fields, and then that was just so much fun, going through the fields with the tractor pulling the sleigh, and then just going sleigh riding too down the hill, because we lived up on a hill, and then we'd go ice skating. And then also,
and your father would ice skate with you?
Uh-huh. We all went ice skating over by a pond. And then in the summertime, we would go down to the Kentucky River. It was Lock and Dam number 7, I think. And we would go down there and fish and swim. And then at night, they would string up a bunch of tarpaulins, and we would sleep out or under those tarpaulins, kind of camp. And at night, we would have a big fish fry and fry all the fish we'd caught. And that would be with Molly and Gus and Mom and Daddy and Wayne. And then maybe some other people too. I don't remember who all was there, but a bunch of us. And it was just always such fun. And then another thing we would do, some friends of Nanny's had a camp at Boonesboro. And it was so much fun. It was big and spacious. And Molly and Mama and Nanny and all of us, and sometimes Reedy or Opal would go with us, and we'd go down to this camp, and like on a Wednesday or Thursday, and we would all stay, and then the men would come on Friday, and we would just have a wonderful time. That was just so much fun, cooking together and going to the beach and hiking around there and playing on the hillsides. That was it was such a lovely place. We really enjoyed that. I think that's a lot of fun.
What is one of your fondest memories of David Motley?
Oh,
what are you?
Coming down the hospital hallway. He was driving a truck at the time Sydney was born. And the morning that I was in labor, he was leaving for a trip. And, you know, we'd kind of been wishy-washy, not knowing, because I was really past due, whether or not he should go out or not. But he left, and he was gonna take him a couple of days. So that Sydney was born on a Wednesday. So it must have been on a Tuesday morning, I guess. Anyway, he left, and Nanny came, and I knew that I was in labor after he'd gone. So Nanny came, and Mama came, and we walked. And finally, Mom and Daddy took me to the hospital about 6 o'clock that night. It must have been a Tuesday. And then Sid was born at 6 a.m. the next morning. So then David didn't come till the next day. So seeing his face when he walked down the hall, he had such a cute smile. He was just beaming. It was so sweet. because we'd both hoped it would be a boy, and it was. It was very special. And then there was another time when Lynn was a baby. She was born December the 16th. So that Christmas was kind of chaotic. And we spent the night at Mom and Daddy's Christmas Eve. That was kind of our custom. And then that morning, we opened presents, and Mom and Daddy were going to Mount Sterling. And David and I were going home because we felt like it was just too much to take everybody and go to Mount Sterling. So Mama asked me if we could if they could take Sid. And I asked David, and he said no. He couldn't live without his boy. Well, we started out the lane. Their lane was about a mile long, and we got part of the way out. And I guess they'd been very generous with us at Christmas. They always have been. And I guess he got to feeling really guilty about it. So we turned around and went back. And both of us crying delivered Sydney to Mom and Daddy. And they took him to Mount Sterling for the day and brought him home. And it was so special that they can do that. And I thought it was special that David agreed to it, because he wasn't always so flexible, but that was the right thing to do. It was our gift to them.
Didn't you find some funny things after he died? Some things.
Oh yeah, the money was the funniest. I cleaned out all of his clothes and belongings pretty fast because it was just so painful. He was such a fanatic about his socks. He always wanted his socks without holes. And poor Nanny, he kept her darning his socks all the time. But I wanted to get rid of those things because I didn't want to see them. It was too hard. But in his underwear drawer, there was a billfold that I'd given him for Christmas. And it was probably several weeks after everything else. It was probably months after everything had gone. And one of the waging debates we had the summer he was killed, he wanted, he had been to Canada fishing in the spring. And in the summer, we took a wonderful vacation. We camped in Wilmington, North Carolina, on the beach. And we just had the most wonderful vacation I could ever describe. It was definitely our best. And he wanted to go to Canada hunting. And I kept saying, no, no, no. You've already had one vacation by yourself. And you don't get to. You know, I was working full time by that time. And I felt like any vacations we had, we needed to be considerate of the family and do things together. So it would come up often, and he would tease about it, and I would tease about it. So one day I was in his drawer, and I decided to get rid of that wallet. And I opened it up, and there was $200 in cash in that wallet. So I felt like he was looking down and laughing at me because he had been saving money bit by bit so he could take his hunting trip in the fall, and was just really amused at the whole process. So that was kind of like a little gift that came afterwards.
What did he, in terms of, is it 1230? Okay.